damn late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Well, we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, introducing Joe Loria, editor of ConsortiumNews.com and author of this latest piece, The New Yorker's Partisan Attempt to Refute Its Claim of Partisan Disinformation on Biden and Ukraine. What a great headline. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you, Scott. I'm fine.
Good. Jane Mayer, who wrote The Dark Side about Cheney torturing people to death back when, a New Yorker reporter, has a piece on Ukraine and Joe Biden and the crazy conspiracy theory that there's something to see here, huh?
Well, I love the headline. Speaking of headlines, the invention of the conspiracy theory on Biden, this has become a mantra. I mean, they've used conspiracy theory before, obviously, corporate media, to shoot down anything that challenges their narrative. But in this case, I've never seen it used so often, and it's just so obvious that everyone is just using this as if an order went out for them. And of course, it was the CIA that created this term, conspiracy theory, about around the time of the JFK assassination. The people who were skeptical of the Warren Report were smeared as conspiracy theorists. It's been used continuously. And here we have now Jane Mayer, who I point out in the piece has a very good reputation, at least did, wrote a piece defending Tom Drake at the time he was being prosecuted under the Espionage Act for simply informing a newspaper about some illegal activity at the NSA where he worked. And here's Mayer now joining the pack. It's quite sad to see that she willfully leaves out evidence that needs to at least be examined. And this is the key point. If she could shoot it down, but please do. But she doesn't even mention a whole bunch of evidence in this story. Just simply dismisses it as a conspiracy theory that was hatched by Steve Bannon in some think tank or whatever that he made up that is devoted to disinformation, she says. Now, I don't know much about that. I'm not a big fan of Steve Bannon's. So, I'm not saying there isn't disinformation coming out of that place. But in this particular case, there's evidence that came after whatever Steve Bannon said, and as independent of Steve Bannon, that Joe Biden was involved in some form of what looks like at least nepotism and corruption, and he openly admitted that in this Council on Foreign Relations conference. The video is there. It's online. I linked to it in my story. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get even a mention where she actually says, instead of looking at the, she's just saying that these are tall tales, essentially, that were all cooked up as a theory to try to destroy poor Joe Biden and protect Donald Trump. It's ridiculous that she didn't look at the other side of the story, and that's the thing that I'm really hammering at her about.
Yeah. Well, so the thing of it is, when you talk about the things that she didn't mention, a big part of that is, of course, the story of the Ukrainians leaking the at least alleged Manafort ledger, the black book, which, has been disputed whether it's even legitimate or not. But that was used to drive him out of the Trump campaign in the summer of 2016. And that clearly was something that Trump was talking about with Zelensky and saying, I hope you'll cooperate with Barr on looking at that. But I guess that's all a conspiracy theory, too. And of course, we can all see, from outside of that narrative, that conspiracy theory, that labeling it that, is just begging the question, right? It's assuming the conclusion that we all already know that there is not anything there to examine. And so there's nothing left but some vague conspiracy theory by people who aren't satisfied with a complete absence of evidence. But then, as you're saying, he's completely refusing to follow the different trails of evidence about what really was going on here, in terms of intervention in the election and in terms of Joe Biden and his son and, you know, first of all, the conflict of interest in him getting the job. And then second of all, whatever was exactly the real story behind the father, the vice president at the time, intervening to get that prosecutor removed. So, yeah, again, you don't have to be a Trump partisan. I know you're not one. You're just a journalist saying, hey, why leave all this stuff out if it's so easy to debunk?
Well, the main there's context that is missing from her story. And the first one is that the U.S., without question, was aiding this violent coup d'etat that overthrew a sovereign government in Ukraine in 2014. It was elected by the people, and there's no mention of that. And there isn't any by Fox either, which, of course, is covering the other side of this from the Trump point of view. Both there's a bipartisan consensus in the media to bury certain stark facts about American foreign policy. One is that it routinely has overthrown governments. As I point out, they wait 25 years when the CIA declassifies some documents. Then the New York Times tells, oh, the Americans were behind the overthrow of Salvador Allende in Chile. So you have to wait 25 years and you might find out stuff. We have evidence right now that the U.S. was involved. The biggest one is, of course, the Victoria Nuland tape. She was Under Secretary of State for Europe and European Affairs, talking to the then American ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Piat, and they were talking about midwifing this thing. In other words, choosing the government that was going to go in, and they were going to glue it together to overthrow this government. And the person who was the point man on that, they were saying that would sew up all the loose ends, was Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. So here we have the overthrow of the government, February 2014. And then 2 or 3 months later, Joe Biden's son winds up on the board of the largest oil and gas company in Ukraine. Plus John Kerry's family friend gets on there, and Kerry was Secretary of State at the time. And then this American woman who became a Ukrainian citizen the day she was made the finance minister. So they installed an American there. Monsanto gets a contract. This is classic neocolonialism without direct rule, but they took over a country, controlled its government, and put in cronies. They got loot. They got some booty from this coup. Why have a coup if you're not going to cash in? This is, I mean, so obvious if you put that story there. That's not there. The second context that's missing is the 2016 election, Russiagate. Okay, Russiagate was a huge failure. Jane Meyer got in on that too. Of course, she's an establishment reporter. You had to if you were going to not be ridiculed by your peers. But that means nothing if you're really serious reporter.
And in fact, she even wrote about how credible Steele and his dossier were, which, oy vey, the worst thing of the whole thing. The wrongest thing out of everything.
So now that we know it was a farce, Trump's Justice Department, rightly, I think, is, and his private lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York, are looking into the origins of Russiagate, how this started, who was involved in the Obama administration, if anyone was. And the veterans intelligence professionals for Sanity, who believes that this was the DNC was leaked and not hacked, but people in there that I talked to and other former intelligence people, and evidence that starts to emerge slowly shows that there was some intervention on the part maybe of John Brennan of the CIA and the FBI we have the Peter Strzok stuff, all of that, where they it looks like there was an attempt to sabotage Trump's election and then his presidency. And the Russiagate story was the big part of that. So she doesn't, I think, if there's evidence that could really damage the reputations of the reporters who all got it wrong, their reputations have already been damaged. I think this has to be seen in that context, that a reporter who got that story wrong, there were so many of them, and they got it so wrong because Mueller found no collusion. They need to rehabilitate themselves, and they need, as the intelligence people who may have been involved in this, need to protect themselves if Barr's and the IG of the Justice Department come up with reports that show them be guilty of cooking up this Russiagate story. Mm-hmm. So they're playing, they're going on offense, and the offense is this impeachment scandal to keep Trump and his people on the defensive, and where they can once again roll out another narrative that is also lacking in skepticism and in critical thinking, which is now this impeachment and the fact that there's no evidence against Joe Biden. He did nothing wrong, except Joe Biden said on that video that he flew in, you know, to Kiev and saw the president then, Petro Poroshenko, who was installed after the coup, and ordered him to fire this prosecutor who was looking into that company that his son Joe Biden sat on, and that the prosecutor apparently wanted to question Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden. And he said he would withhold, and this is Biden's own words, $1 billion in U.S. credit until that guy was fired. 6 hours later, he was fired. They got the money. He laughs about this. Now, I pointed out in an earlier piece, this is the routine way the United States conducts foreign policy. Threats, blackmail, intimidation. And there's so many examples that I just gave a few in that other article. For example, in the 1991 Gulf War.
But wait, let me ask you about this.
Yeah.
Have you seen that there's this piece in the Washington Post where they say that actually, no, just like whenever Joe Biden tells a story, it's never quite right. It's always a jumbled mess, just like he got in trouble a couple of weeks ago talking about some war story out of Afghanistan. And in this case, they say that this all didn't happen while the plane was waiting to take off and all this kind of thing, the way he tells the story. That, in fact, the whole process was drawn out in terms of his involvement from December of 2015 through, you know, for a few months up until he went there in March. And that, in fact, on the timeline, Nuland and Pyatt had already started urging for the guy to be withdrawn as early as October of 2015. So
he just told the end of the story.
In the Post's version, it makes it sound like, well, never mind the way he tells the story. It still was all about Biden was mad that this guy wasn't prosecuting his son's company and everybody else. But when you look at the timeline as drawn out, Moon of Alabama, Bernard had a thing there at Moon of Alabama about when you look at this timeline and you include Pyatt and Newland's denunciations of this prosecutor going back to October of 2015, now it coincides much more closely actually in the timeline with this guy beginning to do something about Burisma. And it makes it even more credible that they were intervening against this prosecutor for that reason than under the previous way that Biden told the story.
Well, the prosecutor's name is Viktor Shokin, and he gave an affidavit under oath that was why he was fired. He also said in that interesting statement that the U.S. had completely taken over the prosecutor's office, dictating who was and who was not to be investigated. Part of the takeover of this country. Now, that Biden video, that sounds like that's just the end of the story. So they've been working on getting rid of this guy for a long time. And finally, that was seems like the last straw. Biden went in there and withheld the aid until he got him fired. I believe completely what he said. Why wouldn't we? The guy testified that that's what happened. Biden said that's what happened. How could you just write, as all the corporate media are saying, there's no evidence, you know, there shouldn't be an investigation that Trump was asking the president of Ukraine for, because there's no evidence. Well, how do you know before you have an investigation? And we do have evidence.
Yeah.
We have that statement by Biden. We have the affidavit by, that's prima facie evidence to investigate whether there was corruption.
Now, there is another narrative, which is that, you know, Hunter Durensis is a reporter I know at the National Interest, and he had a quote from an Obama official saying, trust me, man, we all wanted rid of this guy, and this effort was not led by the vice president at all. And it was, you know, widely known across civil NGO-type groups and anti-corruption groups in Europe and whatever that this guy was really corrupt and they wanted him gone. And even though it might sound fanciful, it wasn't that, as I put it jokingly before, it's not that Biden was mad that this guy wasn't going after his son's company, but just, as they put it, that had nothing to do with it. They wanted rid of this guy because he was just corrupt and wouldn't pursue these kinds of investigations the way he was supposed to and all that. Which, as you say, somebody's got to hash this out, not just assume their conclusion in the headline. It needs to be fought over in an adversarial way until there's only one set of answers that remain that make sense.
Right. And they want to stop the Trump Department of Justice from looking into this and were to discredit it, whatever they come up with, beforehand, including looking into what the Bidens were up to. I heard that the all the International Monetary Fund, the Europeans, all of these groups that also wanted this prosecutor fired are certainly not completely independent actors when it comes to the U.S. and the U.S. domination of another country. So you remember what Victoria Nuland said on that tape about the European Union. She didn't have high regard for them. So, look, I want to see the evidence then that the guy was corrupt. I think it was because he was investigating people they didn't want him to. I mean, maybe he was investigating people they did want him to. I don't know. But, I mean, let's see the evidence that he was corrupt. I never heard that. They're saying that he was corrupt. I mean, anyway, saying that somebody's corrupt in Ukraine is almost like saying, the sun comes up in the morning. So,
yeah,
so there's probably degrees of corruption there.
Well, and there's nothing more corrupt than support for the neo-Nazi overthrow of the government in February of 2014 in the first place, whether it was for Biden's personal interests or for the interests of the expansion of the American empire. They overthrew an elected government.
Yeah, but that's excised out of the story. We don't hear anything about that. There was no coup. This guy just ran away. That was a popular demonstration. I mean, there was definitely unhappiness towards him, and there were protests, but that's how the U.S. works. They don't start a revolt out of thin cloth. They need some group of people who are upset, and then they aid them, spends a lot of money, organize them, help them with media, et cetera, who knows what else, until they get the result they want, which is to overthrow the government, and they did that, and that was a U.S. operation, not to spread democracy. The U.S. never does it for that reason. It's for the interest of capital and geostrategic reasons, and Ukraine's geostrategy was even, I think, paramount over capital, but they made their money on this. It looks that way to me. Biden got himself somehow. How did this guy wind up on this board right after the U.S. coup? And then, I'm sorry, I want to know more about Viktor Shokin's corruption before I buy that story. The point is, you can't, as you say, you cannot dismiss this evidence just willy-nilly as Jane Meyer does, and they're all doing. You know, it's just a conspiracy theory. It's sickening.
Hang on just one second. Hey, guys, I got to tell you about WallStreetWindow.com. It's the great Mike Swanson. He made a killing on Wall Street back in the day, and now he sells advice for reasonable prices. You need to know what to do to protect your assets. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey guys, I know you're going to love Will Griggs' new book we just published at the Libertarian Institute, No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. It's wonderful. It's terrible. It's devastating. You'll laugh. You'll get angry. You'll miss him. You'll be inspired to fight for freedom. With perfect cover art by Scott Alberts and a brilliant introduction by Will's great friend and protege Thomas R. Edlam, it is a fitting legacy for a brilliant man and nearly tireless defender of liberty. Get No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg, in paperback or Kindle on Amazon.com. Now, I'm sorry, because I was trying to find that Washington Post report about the timeline there, but I'll try to find that for you later and email it to you. Because it does make sense that when Biden tells the story that he would be truncating it and combining three stories into one and getting his timeline all wrong and God knows what, because he is
well, he
like
may have
that.
He may have just been telling the last act in that drama.
Yeah.
The last straw, you know, they've been working to try to get rid of him, and then it didn't work. So he finally said, we're going to withhold $1 billion unless you get rid of this guy. That's the story he told.
Yeah.
That could still be true. And there still could have been all of these other events before that.
Right. Well, so I was talking with Matt Taibbi earlier, and then he just put out this article along the same lines an hour or so later today about we're in a permanent coup now, that we're in a situation. He says, you know, he's lived around the world in Russia and in some other places, and he's seen coup d'etats happen, and this is how it is. You know, this is what it means when the intelligence services and the national security state decide that they're just in open defiance of the elected president, and they'll pick and choose which of his orders they'll follow, and they'll selectively leak against him all day. And he goes and rehashes a bunch of accusations that did not hold up, accusing Trump of treason with the Russians in the whole Russiagate fake scandal there. And the effort that, you know, essentially the open warfare by the CIA and the FBI counterintelligence division against this president, and how, you know, Americans, we've never really seen this, and we have regular elections, and that's the way we do it around here. But at this point, those bets are off, and things could get really hectic where, as he puts it, you have different officials on the phone figuring out which different battalions of police and military officials are going to side with them against the other guys and this kind of thing. And boy, is this country lousy with different groups of cops and soldiers to pick and choose on that kind of level, you know? But that's the kind of fire they're playing with. And when, and over what, right? His opposition to NATO, or his pretension to be fair in Israel-Palestine, or any of the things, or even his willingness to really make peace with Russia and end the Cold War, all that stuff was so superficial. And he could have been and has been talked out of all of that stuff pretty easily anyway. They should have known that they didn't have to do this to him. They might not have chosen him, but he doesn't know enough to be that different in kind from what they wanted him to do anyway. And look, he's carried on all the wars anyway. And they've really put this country in danger here, it seems like.
But, well, you're right. This is the principle here, that the intelligence agencies should not be obviously inserting themselves in domestic politics. But they didn't know necessarily that Trump would turn out that way. He was unknown and unpredictable at the beginning.
They should have just read my Twitter feed, man. I said so in 2015 and 16.
Well, let's assume that they didn't know and they were worried and they tried to undermine his election and then his presidency with the Russiagate story. Now we're about to find out how they did that, and it could be criminal. So they are really worried now. This is what I think is happening. They're really worried that Barr means business, although I don't trust Barr being CIA in his background. And then Durham apparently had turned over, whitewashed a couple of other CIA investigations he was involved in.
Yeah, the torture thing for Holder and Biden and Obama, yeah.
The tapes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily trust either one of those guys. Now, but who knows what's going on, whether there's internal battles within the intelligence community. And as you said, this thing looks like it's falling apart here. So I think they have to go on offense. And this impeachment thing, I mean, is really... If in fact he said he would withhold aid, military aid to Ukraine in exchange for these investigations, that telephone conversation doesn't make that clear, a quid pro quo. But even if it were true, he's conducting American foreign policy the way it's always done. Like I said, Biden says you do this, we'll give you the billion. The U.S. says vote this way in the Security Council, we'll give you the aid, or we don't give you the aid. We're going to spy on your mission so that we can get leverage over you, Catherine Gunn discovered in which she leaked at the time before the 2003 election. That's how the U.S. conducts foreign policy. And Trump's mistake was to get involved personally in this with mentioning this to the president of Ukraine. There's supposed to be a wall between the Justice Department and the White House so as not to politicize, yeah, you know, legal matters. And he should have shut the hell up.
That's his real crime more than anything. I mean, other than the genocide in Yemen, is he's just criminally stupid. When he has Barr doing as much as he's going to get out of anybody here, just let Barr know that, hey, I really want to know what happened with that Manafort ledger and that Biden thing. Isn't that part of this? Okay, have a nice day.
And the CrowdStrike issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't bring it up yourself. And then he goes out in public and says he wants China to investigate.
And so hires Giuliani to run the whole op for him, of all people.
Well, I don't know how Giuliani seems to be, if he's telling the truth, he's got all these documents he's saying. I think he's John Solomon's source. I have no way of knowing that, but it could be that the documents that John Solomon has come up with, including that affidavit by Shokin, the fired prosecutor, may have come from Giuliani. He's been in Ukraine a lot. He's been working around there. I want to see what he come up with. I never liked Giuliani. I'm from New York City. He was my mayor for a long time. Couldn't stand him, but I don't care about any of that right now. This is what it means to not be to be nonpartisan. Forget about the politics of someone if they can come up with the goods, the documents. That's
well, he just represents incompetence to me. He seems like such a bumbling fool at this point, Giuliani. I wouldn't trust him to be able to carry this out. Although, then again, if he's running errands for the President of the United States, that's quite a brief, and people will go along with that. So who knows, you know?
I don't see. Why do you say he looks like a bumbling fool? Curious.
He just seems, I mean, they said in the first place, one of the reasons he didn't get the attorney general job was because he kept falling asleep in meetings at Trump Tower and stuff. You know, he's just, he's a old and, you know, he's just,
well, he
always was a kook. Remember when Ron Paul stomped him into the ground? He should have just stayed there. He's not just a terrible person, but he seems like, well, like when Trump is saying to Zelensky, hey, I hear that the DNC server is in Ukraine somewhere. Can you hunt it down for me? I mean, where is he getting that crap from? Giuliani, probably. You know,
well, if Giuliani advised him to talk to the president about that, that was really stupid, yes.
Yeah, I mean, Trump has no idea what's going on here if he thinks that. And that's the kind of thing that Giuliani ought to be filtering out for him. But it sounds like that's probably where he heard it from. You know, I don't know. Now, he was accused of that, you know, other officials had said in the paper they thought that Giuliani was the one who had told him that.
Well, but he may have. There was that story, of course, that CrowdStrike worked in Ukraine. They did have a contract there, and they got it completely wrong about the Russians having hacked into the howitzer.
Which is a huge story. And this is only, what, a few weeks after they claimed that some Cyrillic letters proved that the Russians were behind the DNC hack. They falsely accused the Russians of this malware attack in Ukraine. And because those accusations were very public and detailed, they had to completely eat crow and take it all back a day or two later when every real computer scientist in the world laughed in their face over it.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, the same software that was used to conclude that about the howitzers was used to conclude that about the Russians hacking the DNC.
I'm not sure if that was it or not, but it's the same difference anyway.
I'd like to know where the server is, too. I mean, wouldn't you? That somebody could actually examine it?
Yeah, although, I mean, I'm not so sure that a regular newspaper reporter, maybe even yourself, couldn't probably just ask the Department of Justice the answer to that. I mean, that may be officially part of the record of the Mueller investigation. Everything is, where is the server now? I don't think that's probably a secret. I just don't know if anybody's really asking, you know, other than Trump asking the president of Ukraine about it. I don't know if he thought the DNC server was stationed in Ukraine all along, or it got moved there, or anyway.
But the FBI, which of course is part of the Justice Department, never got hold of the server.
Oh, that's true. And in fact, they admitted in court that they never even got anything they could consider a final report from CrowdStrike proving it.
Exactly.
They just took CrowdStrike's word for it that was what they had concluded.
It was redacted. A redacted draft, not even a final. CrowdStrike never bothered writing a final report to give to the government. They only showed them a draft.
Yeah, because they didn't need one, because all Comey needed to hear was that's what they think, and so good enough. Let's stop right there, because we don't want to accidentally disprove this.
And we all know that CrowdStrike is totally impartial, because they were paid for by the Democratic Party. Just look into their own server. Who did it?
And again, with their anti-Russia bent as well.
I mean, please. You see, this is what... I don't expect Barr to come up and say that was the case, that they weren't hacked, that it was a leak. But he may have some dirt on, and the attorney, the inspector general of the DOJ may have some dirt on some officials in the Obama administration who used Christopher Steele's opposition research, which is what it should always have been seen, which means there's a lot of garbage in there. Digging up dirt, by the way, they're accusing Giuliani of digging up dirt on Biden in Ukraine. Well, what did they do with Steele? He dug up dirt on Trump in Russia, right? From Russians.
Yep.
And half of it's rubbish. And half of all opposition research is exaggeration or outright lies. The idea is to try to destroy your candidate, your opponent. This is not to be used as the basis for a Pfizer surveillance warrant.
Well, and as you say, too, they all do this, but that's not really to acquit Trump as much as just show how dishonest this all is. If they were going to impeach every president from now on over trying to intimidate a foreign government into going along with American goals, then that'd be great.
And I can accept that. And if Trump's got to be the first one hanged, fine. But that means all the rest of them, too, from now on. But yeah, right. Come on. What's going on here is this is the state itself protecting itself from a leader that it wish had never been elected. That's all. Protecting their own interests from the democracy's choice, so to speak.
Yeah. Again, as you pointed out, it's not my choice. I didn't, nor was Clinton, of course. But it's the people supposed to decide this. We got a corrupt electoral system, too. There's so much wrong with it, but that's what we got right now. And I think that's as bad as it is. In Florida, it is. It's better that the CIA and the FBI getting involved in internal politics of the U.S. And I think this could be a war going on there. I really don't know. You know, Barr and Durham went on a plane, right? They've been to Rome. They've been around. They're looking for this Joseph Mifsud, maybe. They are looking at how this story unfolded. That's making people very nervous if they've got something to hide. And I think journalists like Jane Meyer, because there's a threat of it being revealed about how they work together with the intelligence agencies to delude the entire country.
Yeah. Hey, I say let's see every bit of it.
Yeah. They duped the country on this story. So they have to go after Trump again, and they're getting another crack at him to try to get rid of him because Russiagate failed so miserably.
Yeah, and remember, I don't know where this leak came from anymore, but there was the famous NBC reporter, but at that time was working for the LA Times, Ken Danilian. He was caught in, it was in the Podesta email, or no, I don't remember what the hell it was. Was in some WikiLeaks. He was caught saying, "Here's my finished article, Mr. CIA source. You go over it and tell me if you want any changes in there," and this kind of thing, giving final approval to his articles. And I forgot on what topic, but it was something important like torture or spying or something.
And he's still employed.
And I bet you there's 100 of those. And if Barr wanted to go that far when it comes to declassification and then release of documents showing, you know, Mockingbird level operations and that level of cooperation by major American media stars. What do you want me to say, Mr. CIA man? I bet there's a million of those. and you know what? If Trump really hates the media that much and wants to play that level of hardball, well, let's see which all of them are de facto CIA agents.
I would love it myself. And yeah, that's what I think too. They're worried about. They're worried about that. So they have to discredit this investigation that Trump stupidly got himself involved in by asking the Ukrainian president to do these things.
Well, we'll know we're in real third world status if Durham's plane falls out of the sky or something like that. Well, I'm not counting on him doing a very thorough job anyway, so what the hell. But you're right that they are traveling around the world looking, doing something. So
we don't know we don't know whether it's going to be thorough, whether it's a whitewash, whether it's some way halfway, which probably will be, or if they go the full hog, if they got all the evidence, like what you just said, that the entire press corps was in bed with the CIA making up this story, essentially. That's what I think they're nervous about. So this impeachment thing is a great opportunity for them to turn the narrative immediately, just before any of this comes out, to put him on the defensive.
Right.
About a silly. Like you said, if every president who used hard-boiled tactics against other leaders, they would have to put a turnstile in front of the White House.
Yeah.
They would be coming in and out every day in impeachment. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, and I like how it's such a self-inflicted psyop by the Democrats, using the corruption of their front runner and his son as the club to hit Trump with, and putting them in the position of having to demand that everybody knows that Hunter Biden can do whatever he wants and he can collect whatever kind of conflict of interest payment and spend it all on coke and whores, which everybody always leaves that out. His wife says he spent it all on coke and whores. So this is nothing but a windfall to him to go and have fun and play and to compromise his dad. And then the lesson is for the American people that the Democrats can do this stuff all they want. And if you don't like it, you're a conspiracy kook. You're a nut. How dare you imply that Joe Biden, the vice president, can't get his son a job that pays $50,000 a month to sit around doing nothing except having fun?
I mean, that's a pretty winning message for the Democratic Party in the campaign coming up this year, I think they think, but I think they're wrong.
Well, let me ask you something. Let's say Biden has to drop out because of health reasons or because this corruption becomes too obvious. What happens to the Democratic field?
Well, I don't know, man. I have to say, and this may be wishful thinking on my part at this point, but looking at this race through Hillary Clinton's eyes, she's got to be telling herself every day that none of them can do it, that Warren can't do it, Booker can't do it. It's got to be up to her, as she said the other day. I did it before. I beat him before. Referring to the popular vote there, but trying to, again, cast his entire presidency's legitimacy into doubt. I've done it before. I could do it again. Don't tempt me. And I'm just worried that I might die laughing, watching her get the nomination and then lose again, which would be the most tragic and hilarious thing that ever happened in American history, probably, in a very long time. And honestly, I just, you know what? I used to hate her so much, but she is such a comic figure to me now. Her sore loserdom is, to me, the most precious thing, the sweetest nectar. Her misery and her refusal to just admit her own failure here, and her willingness to blame everyone and accept no responsibility whatsoever and all that. It's just, to me, it's been so much fun to watch ever since, you know, she lost and couldn't even make her concession speech that night because her face was such a wreck. They couldn't even put her out there that night. I mean, starting then and ever since, she just cracks me up to death, like literal stitch in the side thing where it hurts and I can't stand it. And so I love it. And I say, bring it. And I say that, you know what? She's right that old Warren cannot do it. She just doesn't have the charisma to do it. Her glasses are just too big and your friend's mom looking thing. She just doesn't have it. There's no way. And then who else have they got? Everyone else up there is an absolute also ran. They might as well all be Herman Cain up there. They're going nowhere. And so I don't know. If anybody is, you know, wants to take out a life insurance policy or something on me, or you know, bet on the extremely minor celebrity death pool there, election day 2020 when Hillary loses to Trump again, might be it. I can see myself suffocating right now.
Well, I've been saying for a while, before this all began with Biden and Trump and impeachment, that if she could walk, she's going to run. And she's going to find a way. She would survey the field and say, there's really none of you. That's great. And for the good of the party, I better get in there. Of course, maybe even after the first primary. Not in this stage at all. Mm-hmm. But now, in particular, if she can get the impeachment, if they get an impeachment, even if he's not convicted, which he almost certainly would not be in the Senate, that wounds him. He was impeached. He stole the election. He's, you know, et cetera. And you know, you mentioned the Manafort thing, and I didn't talk much about it in my piece because I haven't looked that deeply into that aspect of it. But that's another thing they're worried about. If the Republicans can really prove that it was the Democrats who had colluded with a foreign government. I mean, John Solomon of The Hill has done some incredibly interesting reporting on this. Mm-hmm. Says that there was actually Ukrainian officials in the Obama White House being told what to do. Now, that may be going too far, but
no, I hadn't read that one.
Yeah, he said it on an interview, on a video interview. I don't think I read it. I heard him say it on this interview on that Conservative America One or something, whatever mm-hmm. that station is. I heard him say that. So, look, there's a lot of crap they don't want to come out, and it's better to go on the offensive and go after Trump again on a flimsy charge for impeachment, let's face it. Mm-hmm. Impeach the guy on several other kinds of things, like continuing wars without any congressional authorization.
Right.
Not to get Obama and the others off the hook. And I think the biggest of them also was George W. Bush, because he committed the crime, the supreme crime, according to the Nuremberg process, which is a crime of aggression of one nation against another. U.S. was not being attacked or threatened by Iraq. Iraq cannot invade that country on faulty evidence. That nobody measures up to, not even Obama. But Trump is continuing the same policies, as you pointed out. This I don't know what your position is on the whole Kurdish Syrian fiasco, because it looks to me like he really wanted to pull the troops out of there. He announced twice he wanted them completely out, that it was going to happen, and twice it didn't happen. So people in the Pentagon, in the national security apparatus there, are not allowing him to do what he wants. But in this case, he seemed to be almost out of spite. Well, I will just withdraw them a few miles to allow the Turks to come in and slaughter the Kurds. That's a very fishy thing. That seems to me almost more impeachable than a phone call.
I'm, of course, always in favor of withdrawing all troops from everywhere, but it's certainly the case that he could have even just given it a couple of weeks to announce this is happening, hell or high water, no matter what. And so the Kurds, you guys need to strike a deal with Damascus right now to get the Syrian Arab Army back in that border region to fill that power vacuum.
Right.
And
right.
So to keep the Turks out, and Turks, you stay out. Okay, now we're withdrawing. That's yep. So obvious, and they could have done that. And that wouldn't yep. have taken leaving the soldiers there for one more day necessarily. It would have just taken ordering the State Department to admit that Assad is leader of the sovereign government, and that includes northeastern Syria, and let the Kurds strike their deal with him instead of strike their surrender to Erdogan. We got to leave sooner or later anyway. Sooner's better. But
well, Damascus has said they are not going to talk to the Kurds, that they have violated the nation and they don't want to talk to them. But that's the.
I mean, they had right their now. Chance, but you know what? I mean, they could change their mind on that in a day if the proper incentives are there. So, but
That could just be an opening negotiating stance too. I mean, They want them to crawl on their knees now because they're really desperate. But essentially, they'd have to give up ideas of independence and become autonomous. And it's a pipe dream anyway, independence, with all these powers surrounding them. The Turks won't tolerate that. But what I'm saying, what Trump did, given the green light in a phone call where he was clearly rolled by Erdogan, a much cleverer man, he could manipulate him in some way, whatever. And we don't even know what Trump got in return, the great deal maker. He gave a green light to Turkey to invade a sovereign country, and then withdrew the troops and not even withdraw the troops. He redeployed the troops. He has not withdrawn them. That's the issue here.
Yeah.
Should withdraw them, and you actually absolutely put out the right.
But think about that though. With out of all of the things that he's doing, where you know they want to impeach him for blocking an arms deal, as Andrew Coburn was pointing out and put it on this Ukraine thing. And then here, imagine being impeached for removing troops from a battlefield. You know, and they already have this narrative that, Trump's withdrawal from Iraq is what caused the rise of ISIS. I mean, sorry, Obama's withdrawal from Iraq is what caused the rise of ISIS. When it was Obama's support for the jihadists in Syria that caused the rise of ISIS. And then, yes, it's true. The soldiers were no longer in Iraq to prevent them from rolling into Western Iraq. But it's the first part of that that matters by far the most, 90-10 or some kind of split like that.
But
instead, Obama discredited his own withdrawal from Iraq by supporting the jihadists in Syria in that way. And now, so here's Trump again, giving another example of how you can never leave anywhere. Because look what happened here. You know, we helped this group defeat the Islamic State that we had burdened them with in the first place. And then now we're abandoning them to the tender mercies of our allies, the Turks, who ain't so tender. And so, you see, this is, you can call it right now. Years from now, they're going to say, remember that time Trump withdrew from northeastern Syria? And it's going to be part of a cliche about how you can never leave anywhere now.
I think you're right. I think that's going to be portrayed that way. It already is being portrayed that way. I think we can't really believe the crocodile tears for the Kurds. You're right. It's just about the militarists who don't want to pull out at all.
Yeah.
But it was an enormous
because of Iran. That's why they're really there.
I was only pointing out that Trump's a political amateur. But until this point, he really hadn't made such a serious, in my opinion, a mistake like that that's costing maybe many, many lives now. So that was just a huge blunder how he handled that.
Yeah.
You pointed out how he could have done it very well and put pressure all around. Get the Russians to put pressure on Syrians to agree to that. I think the Russians, they would have to pull them on board. It could have been done. There definitely were other alternatives to this one. And he just did it like at the spur of the moment. Okay, pull them back and let them invade. I mean, I'm saying that's more serious than the phone conversation he had with Vladimir Zelensky, the president of Ukraine.
That much is certainly true, yeah. All right. Well, listen, I sure appreciate your great work over there at Consortium News, picking up where Bob Perry left off there. And you got a great bunch of writers and produce a lot of great journalism, including this piece, Joe. So thank you for your work and for your time again on the show.
All right, Scott. We'll have you on our webcast.
Oh, cool. I'm happy to do it anytime.
Okay.
All right, you guys. That's Joe Loria. He is the editor of ConsortiumNews.com. And here he is going after Jane Mayer. She's got it coming. The New Yorker's partisan attempt to refute its claim of partisan disinformation on Biden and Ukraine. All right, y'all. Thanks. Find me at libertarianinstitute.org, at scotthorton.org, antiwar.com, and reddit.com/scotthortonshow. Oh, yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan, at foolserrand.us.